20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hey friends, welcome into an all new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Great show for you today. In just a bit, we're going to be seeing if it's time to get rid of some Green Bay Packers. Do we give up on them? Just send them away and say, thank you for your time in Green Bay, but we're done. We're good. You've had your time. Now it's time to move in a different direction. Seems to be what everyone loves to do is cut, trade, or get rid of players or coaches or coordinators, etc. So we're going to talk about 15 players today and discuss whether or not it's time to move on from these players. No real notes or any news from Thursday, so we can kind of jump right into the episode. If you would be ever so kind, though, just if you are on the audio channel, make sure to, you know, whether you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure to turn automatic downloads on. And if you're on the video channel, make sure to hit that alert button so you're alerted every single time a new show is up, a live show, etc. Sometimes they're impromptu and, you know, you don't want to have to trust the algorithm. You want to be able to just know when your new Pack-A-Day podcast is out. So make sure to do that. We do have happy hour coming up at 3 p.m. Central Time over on YouTube and on Twitch. So you can check that out 3 p.m. Central Time on Friday. But that's all I got for you for, you know, just requests and you know, begging you to support the channel. You could always subscribe and check out memberships as well if you want. But let's jump right in to our main topic. And that is 15 of your favorite or maybe not so favorite Green Bay Packers that we're going to ask the question, is it time to give up on these players? Say enough is enough. You've had your opportunity. Thank you, but no thank you. We're going in a different direction. Let's start with Jordan. No, if you thought Jordan Love was going to be discussed, you go find another channel. You know better than that. You know better than that. We're not talking about Jordan Love today. And if you think Jordan Love needs to be given up on, go find Lombardi. You need Lombardi in your life. We're not going to discuss that today. Let's start with one of the more interesting one that gets talked about and just, I think everyone sort of in some way kind of given up or at least tried to forget about or just kind of put this player to the side and say, I don't even want to think about it. And that's Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd is one of the more unique two-year case studies that you will ever come across. When he was drafted in the third round by Green Bay, it was a very down running back year. And most people, including Daniel Jeremiah, amongst others, had Marshawn Lloyd as the best running back in that draft. Green Bay selected him towards the end of the third round and he got into training camp and oh my God, he looked incredible. He looked absolutely amazing. And there was a ton of buzz about what he was going to be able to bring to this team. And then he gets hurt and then he gets hurt again and then he gets hurt again. And he basically gets a couple carries in 2024. And that was the gist of it. And then he's out for the year. He's got appendicitis. Everything hits him. They're like, wow, that was a really bummer of a year. All right, well, now we get him at least for year two. And then he's expected to be right away there in training camp and he's hurt. And then he comes back and guess what happens at training camp? He looks unbelievable again. And I'm not saying this to say this. I'm lucky that I get to be there every day at training camp watching this. I didn't even need to watch Marshawn Lloyd on my own. I could watch other people watching Marshawn Lloyd and talking about Marshawn Lloyd. Media members, people that have covered the team for a very long time, whoever it might be, you hear them talk about Marshawn Lloyd and you would think that there's this, you know, new superstar in the making that's on the roster. And I can just tell you from my own eyes, he looked incredible once again. What that amounts to, you know, once the regular season starts and things like that, I don't know. I liked what he did in college. I thought he was extremely worth a third round pick when they drafted him. And in two training camps, I've loved everything that I've seen. He looks like you'd have a hard time building a running back that would be a better complement to Josh Jacobs and bring a little bit more juice and an extra burst and somebody that just runs a different way than Marshawn Lloyd. It's perfect. It's a perfect match between the two of them for what Lloyd can complement for what Jacobs already does. And then, of course, year two comes around and he has injury, 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 and he doesn't play a single snap in 2025. And now You're 2 years into the Marshawn Lloyd. I'll call it an experience. It's not even an experience. We haven't got to experience anything other than a couple, you know, runs in 2024 and some interesting plays in training camp. And we have nothing to go off of. He has seen specialists. He's had numerous injuries. They haven't all been the same. And now you're going into 2026 and basically kind of what I said, saying, I don't know what to do with this player. And I think for the most part, that's the right move. Just say, I'm going to put Marshawn Lloyd to the side. And if we get something out of it, great. If we don't, I'm not counting on it. I'm no longer counting on it. Not only should you feel that way, the Packers should probably feel that way. If you're Brian Gutekunst going into this offseason and looking at your running back depth chart, noteworthy that Emmanuel Wilson and Chris Brooks are both restricted free agents, and you're going to have to make some decisions with both of them as well. You can't go in to 2026 saying, well, we've got Josh Jacobs, we've got Marshawn Lloyd, and then we've got Damian Martinez, et cetera. Now, you can't really put Marshawn Lloyd on that list because you just can't trust it. I don't know how you could. I don't know why you would. But the question of today's topic isn't, are these 15 players we should place to the side? The question is it time to give up on these players? And this is where the conversation is unique and different with Marshawn Lloyd. As much as we want to put him to the side and just say, I don't even want to think about him right now, the worst thing, arguably, that Green Bay could do right now is just cut him. There is no advantage to releasing, waiving, cutting, or anything. And there's not going to have a trade value for Marshawn Lloyd at this point because he hasn't been able to play. There's no value in doing that. There is one argument. There is one argument. It's not a good argument, but there is only one argument. He's set to make $1.5 million this year. If you bring him into training camp and he gets hurt again, let's say he tears his ACL or pops an Achilles and he's done for the year, you carry that $1.5 million on your salary cap for the entirety of the season. I will say once again, and I've used this example quite a bit lately, but it's going to come up a lot, I think, because it's worth noting how Green Bay cares, you know, so little for, you know, $500,000. They gave $500,000 to Trayvon Diggs to come in and play one snap in a playoff game, basically. All right. So $1.5 million. And by the way, even if you cut him, you'd only save $1 million. So it's really only $1 million to give up on a third round pick because you're worried about losing $1 million is just a ridiculous thought process. That's not what you're doing at this point in time, but that would be the only argument. Other than that, there is no downside. I guess the only other small one is that if you want a different player on your 90-man roster, you are much better off taking a flyer on, you know, Marshawn Lloyd as a 90th player than some random undrafted free agent or street free agent or something like that. Like, you know, James Ester is on this roster. Would you rather take a flyer on James Ester or Marshawn Lloyd? And Ester's a defensive tackle, different positions, but you get my point, right? No disrespect to James Ester, who's had a couple, you know, nice seasons on the practice squad, but you take a chance on a player like Lloyd, a third round pick, the best running back in his draft, who's looked unbelievable in training camp, over, you know, a random 90-man player on your roster. So truth be told, there's really no advantage here. If you release him, right, you could save $1 million in savings off of his salary cap space. That's deceiving. If you release him off the 53-man roster and save that $1 million, you have to replace him with a player. And the minimum salary for a player this year is basically $900,000. So the replacement player, even if it's the cheapest possible replacement player, is $100,000. You save $100,000 by going to a different back or a different, you know, player to replace him, and at very best. And so at this point in time, you're not going to get trade value for him. By waiving him, you just give some other team an opportunity to recognize his potential. You already gave up a third round pick for him. I'm not saying you have to carry him on the 53 at all, but you certainly give him through training camp to say, all right, can we get this guy through training camp healthy so that he can actually help us? And if the answer is no, meaning you get through camp and he's hurt again, and maybe this one is one where he's out for, you know, 4 or 6 weeks or something, and then you try to bring him back, maybe at that point you say, all right, we're done with this experience. We're going to go in a different direction. But as of right here and right now, you give him that opportunity in camp. There's no downside in doing so. Your upside is that you get that he stays healthy and you get a tremendous running back to complement Josh Jacobs and really be a game breaker and a game changer if he hits his ceiling. And the downside is that maybe you lose $1 million. That's it. So to me, there's not enough downside. I am not ready to give up on Marshawn Lloyd. You keep him for now and at least let him go through training camp. And then once you get there, you see where he's at health-wise and make your decisions from there. Next up, Dontayvion Wicks. This is probably a little bit of a stretch. I don't know that anybody's really pining or asking to get rid of Dontayvion Wicks, but I do think there is now a question of where Dontayvion Wicks is in the pecking order a little bit more. And as you know, many of you at least, I'm a Dontayvion Wicks guy through and through. Love Dontayvion Wicks. But I do think there is probably now a time to have the conversation of, all right, well, we know Christian's ahead of Dontayvion Wicks. We know Jaden Reed's ahead of Dontayvion Wicks. Is it time to bump Matthew Golden up ahead of him as well and just sort of start treating Wicks more as like that true number four receiver? And I think the answer to that is probably yes. I don't think you need to give up on him. There's no reason to give up on him as a wide receiver. His contract did bump up to over $3 million. So $3.66 million because of playing time incentives. So that's one thing that you do have to be a little bit cognizant of. And are you willing to pay your number four receiver 3 points? Yes, I think the answer is clearly yes. Tutu Atwell as basically number four got 1 year, $10 million with the Rams. 3.6 is not that big of a deal. And he's good and he can help your team and he blocks and he can catch and he can do everything, right? That's a simple answer to me. So we probably don't need to spend a ton of time on this one. The ultimate answer is you're not giving up on him. You're keeping him on the team. I know there's a couple of you who are like, hey, trade him for a second. I don't think a sixth or seventh round pick is worth it to get rid of Wicks at this point in time. I think he has more value to you than that. I don't think there's any question about it. So I think you keep him and you absolutely find ways to utilize him. But assuming Dobbs is gone, I would probably more bump him to that number four list or number four spot on the list and probably focus a little bit more of my time, effort, and energy on Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, and Matthew Golden being my primary three. And then I fill in with whatever snaps are remaining with Dontayvion Wicks and then Savion Williams, et cetera, after that. Simple conversation. Don't think we need to go into it more than that. That's how I feel about Dontayvion Wicks. We'll be right back. Hey friends, it's time to shoot your shot on Prize Picks and get $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's right, Prize Picks is now giving you $50 in lineups when you sign up and play your first $5 lineup. Now Prize Picks makes every dunk, every dime, and every board that much more exciting. So don't miss this chance to get started on America's number one app for sports picks. And yes, Prize Picks is available here in Wisconsin. I've been picking more or less every week and have never looked back. Make sure to check if Prize Picks is available in your area today, and it probably is. They're available in 50 states. Now, Prize Picks doesn't end with football season. This week, I'm going with some basketball and hockey. Tyrese Maxey, Connor McDavid, Cade Cunningham, all three are going to be in my lineups this week. I can't wait. And guess what? Baseball season is going to be here before you know it as well. So it's time to join millions of users and sign up for America's number one sports picks app. And Prize Picks puts their users first, so all withdrawals are fast and secure. So download that Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Number three is Bo Melton. Bo Melton's an exclusive rights free agent. There was a lot of frustration that Melton was getting more playing time than Matthew Golden at times, which was a little bit. It's true, but they used him in a way mostly as a decoy and as a blocker for the majority of the time. And actually, when they did send him deep, and he actually came up with some big catches a couple times towards the end of the year. But exclusive rights free agents, a 1 year vet minimum. There's no reason you don't pick that up. And what Bo Melton did last year was give himself a real unique value on a 48-man game day roster. Bo Melton is a fantastic special teams player, both in coverage units, but also he can do a little bit on the kick return unit, and you can use him in a variety of ways there. He's a true sort of special teams. I don't know if I would say ace, but he is a tier one special teams player for Green Bay. That in and of itself has value on a 1 year vet minimum deal. But the fact on a 48 man game day roster that he can go out and provide you, your number five corner if need be, and your number five or six wide receiver, usually probably number five if he's active there, that gives you so much flexibility. He's really taking the job of three different players on game day by being the number five wide receiver, a tier one special teams player, and a number five corner. A lot of other teams, you have three different players for that exact, sort of job description. So to me, again, I'll say the same thing that I did, about Marshawn Lloyd. I'm not saying he has to make the 53. you can absolutely have that conversation once we get to cutdown time of whether or not he's, you know, valuable enough overall to take a roster spot. I think the answer is going to be yes, based on his unique flexibility. But for now, easy decision on the exclusive rights, easy decision to have him in camp. And my guess would be he has a great chance still to make the 53-man roster in 2026. Luke Musgrave, next on the list. Musgrave has a $2.7 million contract that you can mostly get out of. Tucker Kraft is coming back from injury. You have Luke Musgrave, and then you have a trio of tight ends like Messiah Swinson and Drake Dabney, et cetera. It's not a super great group after that. Josh Wiley's a restricted free agent. Fitzpatrick is coming off a major injury and will, in all likelihood, will not be back as an unrestricted free agent. So you're a little bit thin at tight end. I think my answer here is there's no reason to give up 2.7 million for Luke Musgrave is well within reason for what he can bring to the team. But what I will say about Luke is I'm ready to start looking for a different number two tight end. I think that is a very fair just sort of assessment to make at this point in time. I don't know that you necessarily have to replace him, but I would love some competition. And to me, if you could get a legitimate, you know, good number two blocking sort of tight end too, I think you should be in that number two spot ahead of Luke Musgrave. So that to me is what should be on the table is can you A, find competition for Musgrave this year and B, find somebody where Musgrave can walk in free agency next year and you have that number two tight end already set in place that you don't have to search for that next year. But in the meantime, Musgrave can be that number two or at least compete for it. And at $2.7 million, even if he's your number three, it's a reasonable contract because he does have some receiving chops, even if his blocking isn't great and even if he stumbles all the time. I think it's time to quit Luke Musgrave as a real legitimate number one tight end option. I think if you know Tucker Kraft goes down, you probably need to start getting to the point of being a little bit more creative with your tight end room because I don't think you can just put Musgrave out there as a full-time tight end and say, we feel comfortable with that. He's not a good enough blocker, and he doesn't give you enough as a receiver to be a receiving-only tight end. But for now, as a number three tight end, number two if need be, he can stay on the team, but start getting ready to have a replacement plan in place and probably let him walk in 2027. We won't spend a ton of time on the next one because we've basically dedicated an entire episode to it. But the next one is Aaron Banks. You guys know how I feel about it. I would tend to believe in going in a different direction here. I don't think there's any chance that Green Bay is going to. You save to me enough money. It's basically, again, like a, what would I say? Like 1 year, $19 million contract if you want to keep him this year. And that's just too much. That's too much for Aaron Banks for me. But as Brian Gutekunst pointed out in his postseason press conference or his, you know, beginning of offseason press conference, however you want to sort of view it, you know, he said that at the end of the year, once he got healthy, he played at a much higher level. And I went back and looked at my grades and, you know, he was a positive, what, like plus 1.2, somewhere around there, player in his last 9 games. And that's pretty darn good. And so for Green Bay not to have complete egg on their face and release a guard that they spent, that they basically would have spent $30 million on for 1 year of if they released him, my guess is he's going to be back. I still would probably lean towards going in a different direction, but you've got to find a way to replace him if you release him. That's easier said than done. I think he's going to be back. Choose your own adventure on this one. Then Green Bay is going to choose to keep him. And hopefully Banks can play more like he did towards the end of the year and be a good, solid starting guard for Green Bay in 2026. Next is Elgton Jenkins. And the ultimate answer here is yes, it's time to give up and move on from Elgton Jenkins. We've talked about this one. If you didn't check out yesterday's salary cap episode, I highly recommend checking it out. Is it a little bit nerdy and dry with numbers? Yep. But if you really want to know where Green Bay is at from a financial standpoint, what they can do and what they need to do, when you start looking at how Green Bay gets financially solvent and can actually go out and spend some money in 2026, the very first two obvious moves are Elgton Jenkins and then the one we're going to, spoiler alert, talk about next. Those are the two big moves that you have to kind of take care of right away. And for Jenkins, is there a world in which you could keep him? Yes, you could restructure him. You could do a variety of different things. I didn't like how he looked at center, but I also didn't like the effort. I didn't like the intensity. I didn't like the demeanor. And it just felt like he took a major step back. He turned 30 years old. It's time. it's time he's had an, you know, a very, very good career in Green Bay. A couple of big injuries, you know, that unfortunately derailed it at a couple of times. But for the most part, a really, really solid, sound second round draft pick for Green Bay that gave them a ton of versatility. And in his best years was really, really an important piece of the team. I just don't think he has that anymore. It's time to go in a different direction. I think it's time for Elton too. We kind of talked about this with players in the past. Sometimes it's just best for both players to find their own path. Eric Stokes was a great example of that last year, where I just think he needed a fresh coat of paint and something new. And he got that and he thrived with the Raiders. And maybe Jenkins is able to do that with another team, but I think it's time for both sides to kind of have that divorce. And then the other one is Rashawn Gary. He's the next most obvious one, next to Elton Jenkins, to move on from. And the answer for me here is yes, it's time to divorce from the Rashawn Gary situation. The Gary dynamic is so interesting because he came in and everyone, for the most part, wanted Brian Burns, or maybe there was a different draft pick, but there weren't a ton of people that were super thrilled about Rashawn Gary. And he didn't do much his first couple of years, and then he started to break out a little bit. And if there was probably a lot of people that were kind of down on Rashawn Gary. And then he kind of had his breakout pre-ACL injury the last couple of years. He broke out in a major way. And I remember very distinctly, like, Gary was coming off, I think, a pretty solid game. And I said something to the effect of, I should try to find this tweet. I tried to find it at once and I couldn't find it. But I tweeted out something like, man, Rashawn Gary's playing some really good football. You know, he's not in that upper echelon of TJ Watt, Max Crosby. You know, I listed the top defensive ends at the time that were playing, you know, Nick Bosa, et cetera, or Joey, maybe it was Joey Bosa at the time. But I tweeted that out and I got so much blowback of like, yeah, of course he's in the upper echelon of defensive ends. And I was like, am I taking crazy pills? What is going on right now? He's not. He's a very good defensive end, but he's not at that level. And then he has the ACL injury, which is brutal. He comes back from the ACL. First couple months of the season, looks like he doesn't miss a beat. Looks phenomenal. Looks amazing. And then the second half of that year, hits a wall. Understandably, he's coming off the torn ACL and all the rehab and everything like that. And you're expecting he's going to come back the next year or the next couple of years and look amazing like he did right when he came back from the ACL. And he just didn't. And the interesting part is, I think probably Rashawn, when he first got to Green Bay, was actually probably a little bit underrated. And then it got to a point where he broke out. And I actually think he was a little bit overrated at that point. And then you get to this point now where he didn't play well enough, but I actually think that it's almost gone in the opposite direction again, where he's probably still a little bit underrated for what he brings to the team, for how people view him, of just like this, oh my God, he's the worst. He was good in run defense. He clearly did not continue to produce as a pass rusher the way that they needed him to. And the simple answer here is he didn't live up to being a team captain. He didn't live up to the contract. He didn't live up to the draft status. He didn't live up to being the guy that they needed him to be when Micah Parsons went down with injury. He just wasn't good enough. He wasn't impactful enough. And then you got the plays where he's just jogging things out. If you're a team captain, if you've got that C on your chest and the G on the helmet, there's a certain status that you have to play up to. He did not do that, in my opinion. And I've seen that now for a couple seasons, and it's not injury related. This is just who he has been. And when you have that type of contract, and the easiest way to sort of get under the salary cap and have some money to spend is by releasing Rashawn Gary and Elton Jenkins, well, then guess what? It's time to release Rashawn Gary and Elton Jenkins. If you can find a trade, great. I don't think you're going to. If you can find a way for him to take a pay cut and be the number three defensive end, sure, I don't think you're going to. There's maybe some ways around it, but the most obvious is, yes, it's time for a divorce. It's time to move on, and it's time to quit the Rashawn Gary experience. And by the way, best of luck to Rashawn, and as long as it's not Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, et cetera. Hopefully he goes to the AFC somewhere. Hope he goes out and has a great season and great career. You know, no, anything else. But yeah, from a Green Bay standpoint, it's just time. The next one's a really interesting conversation. I've talked about a little bit. It's Carl Brooks. Man, I loved Carl Brooks coming out of the draft. And then his first season, you saw him playing. You're like, this is what a steal. Like, he looks really good. He's legitimately getting pressure. I thought he was going to kind of have like a Corey Williams or Cledius Hunt type career, for those who are, you know, old enough to remember those two defensive tackles who were taken later in the draft and then kind of exploded a little bit later. And I thought he was immediately on a really sound trajectory for that type of player. And then year two and now year three were just not as good. They were not impactful. Now, he was asked to do way too much and play way too many snaps for what he probably should be doing. But that's not an excuse. You got an opportunity and he didn't make the most of it. And now his salary goes up to $3.66 million because of playing time escalators. And because of that, he actually becomes potentially more replaceable. I think he's probably back. It's hard to find defensive tackles. He's had starting experience in the league. He's pretty versatile. He can do, you know, some different things on the line for you. So I'd expect him to be back. But this is one where I think in order to have the final answer, you probably need to get through training camp and to see where your roster is at from a defensive end, defensive tackle standpoint, what you got in the draft, what you got in free agency, and where things are at, where injuries are at. And if you get to a point where there's five guys ahead of Carl Brooks, well, then yeah, you can probably release him and save some money. If not, and you need him, well, then you need him and you're not going to be too worried about the $3.66 million. And of course, if he comes into training camp, just looks amazing and looks great and is looking like he's going to have a breakout, you can keep him then too. But for now, you hang on to him, but he's one of those that you kind of keep an eye on throughout camp. And depending on where he ends up, you could move on from Carl Brooks at the end of training camp. Lucas Van Ness. There's a little bit of a different nuance to this conversation. I don't think anybody's, you know, saying cut LVN, but you do have a decision coming up with the fifth-year option. That's more interesting to me with LVN. And then how much do you trust him as the core number one? I think there is still some frustration with what LVN has given you or what he has not given you through the course of his time in Green Bay so far. I think last year, early in the season, he looked like he was ready to break out. Sort of at the end of the season, he looked like he was ready to take a step as well. And in the middle, he just dealt with a ton of injury. Well, a significant injury, I'll put it that way. Is he ready to be the true starter opposite Micah Parsons? I think so, but he's going to have to prove that. Is he ready to be the guy as your number one defensive end when Mike is out the first handful of games of the season? I don't think so, but we're going to get an opportunity to view it. And the bigger question is, should you pick up his fifth-year option? I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is they will. I also think you could make a very strong argument and just say, no, don't pick it up. Let him play out the year. And if he's awesome, we'll figure out a way to keep him. And even if we have to pay him a little bit more, that's fine. It's an interesting conversation though. I would love if they could find a way similar to what they did with Jordan Love is to find a middle ground and say, we're going to extend you. We're not going to pick up your fifth year, but we want to extend you 1 year. You get a little bit less than what you would have gotten the fifth year option, but you get a little bit secure of security in that situation as well. I think that would make sense, but overall, I think they pick it up. And I don't think, again, anyone's willing to give up on him, but that's, to me, this is a huge year for LVN. And I think I would like to see him maybe put to the test and make him prove it this year before you give him any additional money. That's how I would kind of view it. We'll be right back. Next up is Devontae Wyatt. And this is another one where we're not talking about cutting Devontae Wyatt here, but we're talking about, do you give him that extension? Now, we talked about on the salary cap episode yesterday of how one of the ways to save some money is actually by extending Devontae Wyatt, which would cut his caps, you know, cap hit this year and actually save you some salary cap space. This is an interesting conundrum, though. Devontae was a first round pick. He's a good player. Micah Parsons raves about him, but he's never fully lived up to expect, not even just the expectations of being like a first round pick, of just a consistently good defensive tackle. He's never done that. What's either happened is, and for the most part, what's happened is he usually starts off great and then he hits a wall or gets hurt. And then once he comes back from injury, it never looks the same. And that's sort of what we saw with Wyatt really throughout his career. And by the way, you know, Devontae Wyatt is not, you know, super young either. I think he's 28. He'll be 28 in March. On March 31st, he's going to turn 28. And so, you know, you can sign him to a three-year extension. You have him for ages 29, 30, 31. That's fine. That's probably fine. But you do have to make that determination of just how much you want to give Devontae Wyatt based on what he's done for you so far. There's probably not a breakout waiting for Devontae Wyatt. This probably is who he is. So just how much do you want to give that player? If it's like 3 years, 30, sure. What if it's 3 years, 45? What if it's 3 years, 55? It's a horse of a different color. And if it is that high, then I would say, yeah, it's probably time to move on from Devontae Wyatt after this season, keep him on this year, and then let him walk in free agency next year. How about Quay Walker? Time to quit Quay Walker? This, to me, all comes down to dollars and cents. Simple as that. What's the price? Can you get him at 3 years, $18 million? 2 years, $12 million? 1 year, $6 million? Anything around $6 million per year, feel good about. Seven, eight, maybe $9 million? Can have a conversation about it. $10 million or more? See you later. I don't think it's worth that. And I think you can find ways to spend that money better elsewhere. I think Quay has taken steps. I think he's probably a player that's a little bit underrated at the moment, but he has his flaws and he has some inconsistencies in his game. There are times he looks like a stone cold killer and is flashing to the football and hitting big. There's other times where it feels like he's just a step slow to the action and more reacting rather than diagnosing and flying to the football. He's had some struggles in coverage and he's not the best at taking on blocks. So there are some things that are not perfect there with Quay. I do think he teams pretty well with Edgerrin Cooper. I think you can make that linebacker room more than work. But if it gets too expensive, I think you're better off utilizing that money elsewhere than overpaying a mid-tier linebacker. And I think he'll get paid by somebody else. And for that reason, I would say, yes, it's time to go in a different direction with Quay Walker. Keyshawn Nixon, we'll just do the next. We'll just do next one first. Keyshawn Nixon, a lot of frustration with Keyshawn Nixon. I'll keep this one as simple as I can. Keyshawn has his flaws. And in an ideal world, he's probably like a number three corner. And he's certainly not a number one. I think if you're putting that blame on Keyshawn, I think it's probably slightly unfounded, except for the fact that he kind of brings it upon himself sometimes, or a lot of times. I'm not a big Keyshawn guy, personally. I think he's fine. I don't think he's good. I don't think he's great. I don't think he should be, you know, really a like, in an ideal world, a legitimate starting corner. If you move on from Keyshawn to get a player similar to Keyshawn in free agency, you're probably paying about $12 million per year. Look at Nate Hobbs. Nate Hobbs legitimately got $12 million plus per year last year, and he was worse than Keyshawn Nixon. That's a going rate for a corner that's like Keyshawn Nixon. And you have him for $5 million this year, $7 million against the cap, but $2 million of that is guaranteed no matter what. So you can't do anything about it and is already paid. So for an additional $5 million, you keep him. Yeah, you just do. He has value at that price. Where things get interesting is if Keyshawn demands an extension, demands a raise. Then see you later, Keyshawn. We're going to go in a different direction. We probably have trade value for you as well. Some other team, knowing that you have experience as a starting corner, slot, outside, and you can return, some team would give up something, I think, for him. That to me is where the line of demarcation is if he's just willing to be back, finalize this year, and then hit free agency next year, cool. He's back on the $5 million. If not, if he's saying, I'm going to hold out or I need a raise, then cool. We're going to ship you elsewhere and we'll get what we can in return for you, if we can. Carrington Valentine, he also gets the playing time escalator to get him to $3.6 million. 3.6 for a corner that started a lot of games for you is not the worst contract in the world. But I do think you have to live in a world where Carrington is more of like your number, maybe even like number four, but at minimum, or at best, your number three corner. He can't be a starter. The tackling's not good enough, and the coverage isn't good enough to make up for the tackling. It's as simple as that. So I'm willing to give up on Carrington as a starter, but for the price, I'm willing to keep him on the roster. I will propose this to you, though. This is an interesting conversation. Carrington Valentine and Carl Brooks both get that escalator to bring them to about $3.6 million per player. Every transaction, every move, every keep, every re-sign, every non-release, everything is sort of a trade-off, a trade. What could you get for $7.2 million in free agency if you were to release Carl Brooks and Carrington Valentine? It's an interesting question. Could you get a solid corner? maybe one that's better. Could you get a solid defensive lineman? Maybe one that's better. You probably can't get both, but is there a good enough player that, you know, if you would pick up the phone and say, hey, we would trade you Carrington Valentine and Carl Brooks for this player, and they say yes, then you'd be like, great, we would do that. Could you find a player in free agency for $7.2 million that would be worth that trade? Basically, again, trading Valentine and Brooks for a free agent worth $7.2 million. If the answer is yes, then you should do that. You should release both players and go get that free agent. That's a real, thing that you should think about. It doesn't always have to be a trade. And the other thing too is you might get something in return. You might call the league and around the league, and both Brooks and Valentine might have seventh round pick value somewhere around there. And so if you could get a seventh for Valentine and a seventh for Brooks, save $7.2 million, get two late round draft picks, and now have that money to spend in free agency, that could be an interesting trade-off. So I'm not quite willing to give up completely on Carrington Valentine, but I am willing to give up on him as a starter, and I am willing to give him up if you can get something in return and use that money elsewhere similar to Carl Brooks. All right, last couple, Nate Hobbs. It's such a bizarro conversation. You don't save a ton of money this year, but you do save money overall. He was bad. You don't have a spot for him in the slot. He can't play outside. He wasn't good enough at it. He was banged up the entirety of last year. You know what? I'm letting you decide this one. I don't have a strong take on this. That's probably bad podcasting and bad analysis. It just is. I can't just say I don't know. But if you think that he's going to be healthy, and I'll say this, he looked really good in training camp last year. It means nothing for the most part, but I loved what I saw in camp out of him. And that was when he was healthy. And he said, like, hey, I'm going to come back healthy and I'm going to be the best corner on this team or something to that extent. I'm okay with giving him another year to see what that looks like. I graded his tape with the Raiders the last couple of years before he was, before he came to Green Bay, and it was much better than what we saw in Green Bay last year. I think probably the ultimate determining factor on this is if you really don't think he can play on the outside and you know Bullard's going to be your slot guy, there's your answer. You can't pay, the $10 million plus for a backup slot corner. Just it's not good business. So that's your simple answer, simple question, simple answer. Can he play on the outside? The answer is no, and I think it probably is. And you're going to play Bullard in the slot, which I think is yes. I think he's going to. Then I think it's probably time to go in a different direction with Nate Hobbs. Last but not least is Brandon McManus. This is another that I would say choose your own adventure, and I don't have an argument against it. I think McManus will be better this year. Kickers are fickle. You could have a guy that kicked terribly last year and he could kick amazing this year. You get a guy that was amazing last year and he could be terrible this year. I would just say I'm okay with bringing him back, but I want true legitimate competition. I don't want just Lucas Haversick or an undrafted free agent kicker. Find somebody that can legitimately battle him in camp and may the best man win. So I don't think you have to give up on him now, but if he's the worst of the two kickers, then give up on him and go with the other guy. Otherwise, continue with him and pray and hold your breath that he can be better in 2026 than he was in 2025. That's my list. Let me know. How'd I do? Would you keep somebody different, cut somebody different, try to maybe trade somebody different? Let me know what you think. I would love to hear from you guys in the comments. The players we went through again today, Marshawn Lloyd, keep. Wicks, keep. Melton, keep. Musgrave, keep. Banks, I would probably let go. They'll probably keep. Jenkins, let go. Gary, let go. Brooks and Valentine, I'm open on both of those. Van Ness, keep, but figure out the fifth year option. Devontae Wyatt, keep, but figure out if you really want to give that extension or not. Quay Walker, get rid of. Nixon, probably keep unless he asks for a contract extension and or a raise. And then Nate Hobbs, depends on if you think, feel like he can play outside or not. I would say probably move on. Brandon McManus, keep, but find legitimate competition for. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle, Sinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Aiden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhardt, Richard Morales, Les Nienau, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Liddell, Nemo, Donald Decker, Damon Hartley, and Zilch Zillertson. I'll see you guys 3 p.m. Central Time for happy hour. And of course, tomorrow for an all new episode. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.